In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Yeah.
Let's
time to talk movies to indeed. As we welcome in Alan Adams from The Main Edge. Hello there, Alan.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. It's Monday. Came up on us kind of fast. I wasn't quite ready, but now it's almost gone, so I'm okay now.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Because again, as we all know, time has no meaning.
No, it does not. Did the weekend part go okay for you?
Yeah, we had a pretty good weekend. We actually continuing our streak of picking the strangest days to go to camp. We went down on Saturday, when it was pouring rain. it's dawning on me that, if we're ever really struggling with drought conditions, all I need to do is make plans to head down to Montague, and that should take care of it. Because it's been eerie. Our trips down there this summer have been marked with rain. But, I mean, the reality is, like, even if it was sunny, it's not like we were going to be doing a whole lot outside anyway. It's just a nice place to sort of get away. We go, and it allows us to disconnect from our lives a little bit, play games and read books and hang out with our dog and just generally, have a nice time.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's nice work if you can get it, tell you that.
Darn right. Well, you saw some movies, too, this weekend, three of them. You want to save the best for last?
I sure do.
All right, so what shall we start with, then?
We'll get this one out of the way. So Hulu has a new movie called The Binge, streaming on their service. It's directed by a gentleman by the name of Jeremy Gorelick. Screenplay is by Jordan Vandina. It is the elevator pitch for this movie was clearly something along the lines of, okay, so it's super bad. But The Purge.
Wow.
And look, sometimes genre mixing can work beautifully when you're making a movie. Like, bringing together sort of disparate influences and creating something new could be really exciting and really entertaining. In the right hands and with the right ideas, those sorts of mashups can be real winners. But it's when those efforts can very easily go awry. And when they do, you're left with The Binge is what you're left with, Rich. So here's the gist. So it's the year 2032. Although apparently the year 2032 is almost exactly like now. The gist is the United States has engaged in an all-encompassing return to prohibition. So all alcohol and recreational drugs have been rendered completely illegal. But there's a caveat. One night a year, it's all legal again for 12 hours. Anyone who is 18 years of age or older can partake in whatever substances they can get their hands on. And that day is known as The Binge. We've got a high school senior named Griffin, played by Skylar Gisondo. Good kid, good grades, already gotten into college. Kind of a quiet kid, a little bit of a dork. Madly in love with this girl, Lena, who he's known since childhood. Lena's played by Grace Van Dien, who also happens to be the daughter of Principal Carlson, played by Vince Vaughn, who is a very vocal opponent of The Binge. But Griffin's best buddy, Hags, played by Dexter Darden, is very adamant that the two of them are going to binge it up for all they're worth. Specifically, he wants them to engage in something called the Gauntlet, which is this binge night competition where the winners kind of become these local legends. Griffin decides, okay, well, I'll give it a go. They wind up inadvertently tagging along with the class weirdo, this kid named Andrew, played by Eduardo Franco, and they're trying to make their way to the big secret party that's happening where all the booze and the drugs are going to be and the gauntlet and all that stuff. Numerous obstacles that need to be overcome. There's mean girls, car crashes, Andrew's evil twin half-brother named Seb And I did say evil twin, half brother. It's explained in a very convoluted and ridiculous way. But that's the thing, Rich. This entire movie is convoluted and ridiculous. Meanwhile, in a sort of parallel quest, Principal Carlson is out looking for his daughter who has snuck out, and he has his own secrets regarding the binge. And it's all rendered far more complicated by the fact that everybody is getting drunker and more high as the evening progresses, with booze and all manner of drugs. Just they stumble their way through the night to remember that they probably won't remember. Look, it's not terrible. Like, there are a couple of laughs, although they're more cringy laughs than anything. And, like, I'm not going to argue against the basic concept. Like, I feel like this sort of, like, parodic repurposing of the fundamentals of Purge could be kind of fun. But, I don't know, it just seems like the filmmakers are content to just, you know, use the backdrop as a place into which they can sort of drop their standard teens gone wild, one big night kind of formulaic nonsense. I mean, I don't need a grand and important message. Like, nobody's asking for that. But, I mean, a little more effort into, like, fully embracing the central conceit would have been nice. Like, it just, I don't know, it just feels like the sort of typical, like, party movie, just more absurd and logistically questionable. Performances are fine. Vince Vaughn kind of runs the gamut and does his Vince Vaughn thing. And I should make a note of this. They do have a disclaimer at the beginning of the film, but it bears repeating. The narrator of the film is not Morgan Freeman. They made a very deliberate effort to make it sound like Morgan Freeman, but they make clear that it is not, in fact, Morgan Freeman.
Okay.
It's fine. There are a couple of okay laughs, but you can feel free to give this one a miss.
All right. That's number one. What about Class Action Park?
I really liked this movie, Rich. It's a documentary on HBO Max by two guys, Chris Charles Scott and Seth Porges. And it's the story of Action Park, which is this notoriously wild and horribly unsafe amusement park that was operating in New Jersey from like the late 70s into the mid 90s. It's a film that sort of delves into the park's origins, as well as the many unsupervised dangers that turned it into the summer destination for New Jersey teenagers, and B, the subject of assorted lawsuits for injuries and even a few deaths. It brings together archival footage that, I've got to be honest, Rich, is frankly terrifying, along with some interviews with people who worked at the park, as well as some who enjoyed the park during its heyday. It's narrated by John Hodgman, which is it's a wonderful, weird little touch. And it paints this sort of vivid and kind of shocking portrait of basically what happens when you allow hordes of teenagers to run rampant on a collection of poorly engineered rides with inexperienced employees and no accountability.
Yikes!
And that's like you've almost certainly seen like images from the park, particularly the loop-de-loop water slide it's like this huge water slide that has a literal loop-de-loop at the end, like an enclosed tube at the end where you loop the loop before you come out.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah. And all this stuff there were no engineers involved in building any of this stuff, whether we're talking about the water slides or the alpine, sort of tracks or the go-karts, and all of it run by, 15 and 16-year-olds who were less interested in paying attention to what was going on and more interested in, in getting drunk and hooking up. And so, obviously, it's a recipe for disaster, and it just metastasizes into this just chaos. Like, it's such a fascinating idea that a place like this even existed is remarkable. But the guy who was behind it, this guy named Eugene Mulvihill, kind of a shady dude, big surprise, and really found all these sorts of workarounds to make it sort of, work, whether it was creating a fraudulent insurance company because no other insurance company would actually, cover the place, one of the little details, it's a throwaway detail, but it was just, I just sort of clung to it. The local hospital basically demanded that Action Park have its own ambulance because they were making so many trips. So the park had to have its own ambulance to take people to the hospital because, you know, it wasn't like, I mean, obviously, like just, and at its peak, like a million kids were going through these turnstiles over the course of the summer, like thousands a day, you know, and a lot of them are getting scrapes and bruises, you know, multiple times a week, somebody's going off in an ambulance. And a handful of times over the life of the park, like people, like kids literally died at this park.
Yikes. Wow.
And yeah, and it was just, I guess my big takeaway is, you know, parenting was a little different in the 80s.
I would say so, yes. Wow. All right.
Again, beautifully made, fascinating, and really funny and unsettling, I think, as it was just a good time for me.
All right. Also different in the 80s, learning about history through the eyes of a couple intrepid travelers who, after many, many years, have finally reunited. I know you're excited. A lot of people excited. Tell us about Bill and Ted Face the Music.
I'll be honest with you, Rich. Like I was, I have very complicated feelings about this movie when I first heard that it was happening. Because there have been rumors over the years of a Bill and Ted 3 sort of coming along, but you know, you reach a certain point, especially when Keanu Reeves sort of, you know, made the leap to A-list movie star. It's like, okay, so he's never going to play, you know, Ted Theodore Logan again. Like, he's not going to do that. And so when I heard that this was going to happen, I was like, oh, is it? I want this, but do I? Like, that's the thing. It's a very delicate dance because on the one hand, it's like, oh, I would love to see these guys again. But on the other hand, like, if this movie falls short, is it going to, like, sort of retroactively impact the way I feel about the previous movies? Because again, like, I am someone who came of age at precisely the right time for the first two Bill and Ted movies. Like, they came out in 1989 and 1991. That was Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. You know, so that's like, that's me in the seventh grade and a freshman in high school. Like, that is like, I am 100% dead center of the target that they are aiming at with this movie. It's like, I am the person who they want to convince to rekindle a relationship with these dudes. And again, the track record for this sort of, you know, decades late comedy sequel is not great. Like, we've seen a few of these over the in recent years, and they have been not good experiences for anyone. Whether you liked the previous movie or not, like, they were bad experiences across the board. And so, imagine my relief, Rich, when I sat down and I watched Bill and Ted Face the Music, and was just charmed. Like, it was just like, honestly, it was like, you know, those friends you have that you don't talk to for a long time, and then it's like you run into them or you pick up the phone or there's some sort of encounter, chance encounter, and everything just gets picked up right where you left off and feel like any time has passed.
Yep.
Like, that's what it was like for me to see these guys again. Like, it was just like, the film really captures the essence of what made them resonate like 30 years ago. While also allowing them a little room to tell a different kind of story. Like, it's a story about adulthood and the pressures of expectations and the challenges that can come from a life that lacks balance, even as they are in many ways basically the same, like, amiably goofy dudes that they've always been. You know, it's about family and legacy and what the next generation's ideas about the world mean and how they're impacted by those who came before. You know, and having your path dictated and the disappointment when it proves too difficult to follow, and just weird and hilarious and moving and just very sweet and unapologetically strange. Okay, so the gist is 30 years ago, Bill and Ted, played by Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves respectively, played the song at the Battle of the Bands that would ostensibly be the one that put the universe in harmony and defined the future. However, as we learn, when we sit down to watch Face the Music, it turns out that wasn't exactly the case. The song was excellent and it was successful, but it was not the one that was meant to unify the cosmos. And so in the decades since, they've been on this quest to fulfill the destiny that was laid upon them and the quest has been largely futile. Like Wild Stallion, the name of their band, was successful, but has gradually sort of fallen out of favor to the point where, you know, they're playing Elks clubs and wedding receptions. Like they're not big stars anymore, and so but they're still single-mindedly devoted to the idea of trying to figure out how to make this song. Like they're married. They married the princesses that they discovered in medieval England back in Excellent Adventure, Joanna and Elizabeth, and they have kids. They have daughters. Bill's daughter Thea, played by Summer Weaving, and Ted's daughter Billy, played by Bridget Lundy Payne, both of whom, by the way, are doing exceptional takes on. I don't want to call them impressions because that I feel like that diminishes what they're doing. But really, they really do a good job of capturing the vibe put forth by their dads. And so they're best friends, they're music aficionados, like I said, very much their father's daughters. But time's run out. In the future, it is determined that without the song, immediately, the very fabric of the universe is tearing and reality will collapse in and on itself. The great leader, played by the always excellent Holland Taylor, sends Kelly, played by Christian Schaal, who is the daughter of Rufus, Bill and Ted's old mentor, played by the lamentably late George Carlin, to fetch them and tell them, okay, this is it. You have 77 minutes to make the song that will save the universe. When they learn that, they decide they're going to go into the future and steal the song from future versions of themselves. And this goes about as well as you would expect. Meanwhile, Thea and Billy decide to take matters into their own hands, and they venture out into the time stream as well on a mission to assemble history's greatest band so that when their dads do write the song, they will have the best possible chance at success when the time to play it arrives. This, too, goes about as well as you can expect. So two generations of Preston DeLogans venturing in different directions through the time stream, hoping to make the right choices to save reality as we know it, even as their sort of affable denseness continually lands them in various flavors of peril. We meet, like, old friends. Death, William Sadler, comes back as Death. We have new friends, an evil killer robot named Dennis, played by Anthony Carrigan, who's so good on Barry. And a number of other historical figures that I'm not going to name because I don't want to spoil anything. Look, man, it's rare that a film is so utterly and completely aimed directly at me as this one is. I have a great deal of bias towards this movie. I loved Bill and Ted, and as someone who has admittedly taken my own up and down journey into adulthood, I can certainly relate to the struggles that come with outside forces influencing our direction. But like I said, man, it was just, the truth is, I was just really happy to see my friends again, you know, to catch up with them and see how they've been doing. Like, we've all been growing up, you know, and none of us has done a perfect job of it. And so, seeing, like, revisiting that just undeniable friendship, both in terms of the characters and of the actors playing them, you know, Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves have been dear friends ever since that first movie. Like, they're still friends to this day. And frankly, that friendship is probably a big reason why this movie exists in the first place. And the script was written by the original writers, Ed Solomon and Chris Matheson. And it was just such a trip. It was so fun to just watch these guys and to enjoy this story, another story with these wonderful characters that I just carry such love in my heart for. And Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves are, like, they know these dudes, you know what I mean? Like, and it's just like, even 30 years later, like, they still very much capture the spirit of who those characters are, as well as the sort of logical development that would come with two weirdos like this sort of being forced into the situation that they're forced into. And then you have Weaving and Lundy Payne, who have really excellent chemistry of their own, and they're funny and charming in their own way. I mean, it evokes Bill and Ted, but it never really turns, you know, tips over that edge into mimicry. Sadler's great, Carrigan's great, Kristen Schaal's wonderful. And there's some throwback characters from the first film, like Ted's dad is here, both Missy, who was both Bill and Ted's stepdads, stepmoms in various films. She's here. You know, Beck Bennett shows up as Ted's little brother, and Jillian Bell is here. She does a there's a great scene with couples therapy that's pretty hilarious. But look, I don't know if I'm being clear, but I really like this movie. but I was always going to enjoy it. You know what I mean? Like, for someone like me, the fact that it exists is enough. But the thing is, it's actually good. Like, it's like I was going to like it even if it wasn't, but it is. Like, it's far better than these sorts of delayed continuation sequels tend to be. Like, it's hilarious, and it's heartwarming, and like I said, it's just a chance to check in with the kinds of friends with whom you simply pick up where you left off, regardless of how long it's been. As they say, like, and, you know, words to live by, especially in these turbulent times in which we currently live, man, we just be excellent to each other, you know? And if the opportunity presents itself, party on, dudes.
So you can go home again every once in a while.
Yes.
That's awesome. Wonderful. Well, thank you, Al. Appreciate it. I'm glad you enjoyed it so much. I look forward to checking it out myself. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, man. It was nice to be able to talk about it, honestly.
Awesome. Hey, are you with us Wednesday? Is there a paper this week, or are we still every other?
Not this week.
Okay.
We are biweekly still, so September 9th will be our next edition, but I'll be happy to chat with you next Monday.
That sounds like a plan and a half. We'll see you then. Thanks, Alan.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Alan Adams, The Main Edge, talking movies here on Pass the Popcorn on Downtown.